This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I love it.
Okay, this is one of my most favorite Afro Latin jazz albums. The title of the album is actually Shiluba. It's sung by Toucan Toucan, who are an Afro Mozambican South African Afro jazz group, and their vocalist is Mimi Mjali. And the name of the album is Shiluba. And I'm thinking you should have just used them as your theme song. So you can go home and listen to Shiluba by Toucan Toucan. But from the DA to Action SA to the flower power of Shiluba, will this party bloom and blossom in the 2024 general elections? And what do they represent? We're joined by the president of the Shiluba Party, Bongani Baloyi. Good morning.
Good morning, morning. Thank you so much for that song. I think it has lifted our spirits. That was a beautiful touch. Really appreciate it.
Okay, so it's an interesting name for a party, the flower. Why?
Correct. Look, we are flowers of this nation. We are going to deliver to the communal table, to the country, in terms of a positive output that moves, develops, changes, that envisages the country differently compared to what we have. So we felt that we don't subscribe to the name such as the revolutionary forces of so-and-so. We don't carry that tag. We don't have that burden. And we really thought for us, we are flowers of this revolution. So before you can see a flower bloom, you must do the hard work first. And that's what we are doing now.
This reminds me, now that we're listening to Toucan Toucan, the Mozambican revolution, they had that very powerful image, which became a symbol of their revolution, where once you silence the guns, you put a flower at the end of the barrel.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's that time. It's that time. I mean, the flowers represent this future of this country. It represents the democratic dividends of our democracy. It represents progress. It represents ending of our tears of our mothers.
Mm. Something beautiful.
Absolutely.
That must come out of it.
Absolutely.
Okay. But in order for a flower to bloom, there's a lot of work that needs to happen. And a lot of work that's happening actually beyond the surface, the microorganisms in the soil. We see the flower as a result of a lot of work that we don't see below ground. So, do you believe you're just going to be a flower that blooms, or you're going to have to do a lot of that work below ground that people aren't going to see?
We're still doing that. I firmly believe that when it might even happen that when the flower blooms, I'm no longer there. So I've committed to working hard and ensuring that one does the work that people don't see. And that's why we chose to take the scenic route and actually walk and talk to people and not put primary currency on money, but actually put the currency on our efforts, on the fact that we're unemployed, we've got time, we've got energy, and let's use what we have. Because money in politics is coming to an interesting conflation, call it that. One is actually not good for the democracy of the country because democracy is bought these days. It's not hard-earned, it's really bought. It's about who has the money to buy it.
So lobbying, lobbyists.
I mean, it's buying. Call it lobbying, but it's actually buying democracy to preserve people's interest.
Okay, status quo. So you are saying that your party is doing a lot of grassroots work on the ground where flowers grow. You see the children of this democracy as a generation of flowers who need to embrace a new language beyond revolution, but reimagine the future. You want to create something beautiful. Flowers are beautiful. You want to do it organically.
Correct.
This is how I'm understanding
it's
this whole metaphor.
Absolutely. It is the only way. And the beauty about this flower is changing the environment and the soil that we've been planting in. Because what we also recognize and realize as young people is that this constitutional democracy has actually given black people marginal material improvement. So whose democracy is it? So we are actually not bound by agreements of CODESA. We're actually starting to say, but let's think beyond. Let's think, not just think within the system of constitutional democracy, but let's think outside of the system and what the alternatives are.
Okay, so let's use your metaphor. So flower for the country, something new, but the people of South Africa are these flowers that nurture this new garden. A lot of those flowers are young South Africans who, as you say, are not burdened by history. They've been called Born Frees. That was rechristened to Tin Swallows recently.
Exactly.
You're calling them flowers. So what are you really offering them? Look, these children who are not burdened by history.
Look, we must be honest when we make our offer by starting to say our reality that the democracy is giving birth to has not met our expectations. So we must build anew. In building anew and crafting anew, it requires us to not be burdened by the status quo and agreements made by our history, but to be bold enough to say, but let's look at the entire system and look at the alternatives that we have available to us. It does not make sense to me when I keep reading up on the Forbes list and it's individual South Africans who are making money and profiting from what is beneath the land when there's people who have been living there. And those people who live on top of that land watch an economy and trucks moving by every day. And only one person on the group or groups of individual are the ones who are benefiting maximally. For me, there's something wrong in that regard. I really think this is we have really bastardized our society by profiteering and actually putting money above people, even though the same people who have lived in the on that piece of land for generations don't see anything except getting general employment workers while people benefit from the wealth beneath the land.
Okay, so when you use that metaphor of people living in mining towns, who day in and day out watch trucks leaving with their mineral resources. At the end of that chain are the equity partners who are making the money, big conglomerates, and a handful of BEE beneficiaries. Inside those mining towns, which ironically have a lot of mineral wealth, there's a lot of poverty, so there's a disconnect. So I hear you saying quite a few things here. There's a beneficiation gap, there's an equity and ownership gap, there's a BEE problem, there's a wealthy country but huge inequality problem.
Absolutely. And that is all manifestations of lack of leadership. So leadership, governance, and allocation of resources delivers what we see, whether it's good or bad. But I equate every problem we have in this country as a consequence of leadership, governance, and also allocation of resources. So whether it manifests in the economy, whether it manifests in the state of local municipalities, whether it manifests in the fact that the economy is not performing and therefore our government is cross-subsidizing more and more citizens and paying young people pension of 375. They've increased it recently. So I see that as saying, but the key fundamental problem here is leadership.
Right. Okay. And so in an election, how do you propose to fix that? So next week there's an election and you wake up and you are the presidential candidate for this country. Parliament votes you in. First order of business for you when you're at Mahlambandlov.
We must resolve governance. So we're saying we must restructure government. This is what we mean by it. So number one, we must embark on steps to move away from this constitutional democracy towards a parliament sovereignty.
Explain.
We firmly believe that a constitutional democracy has actually empowered more democratic dividends to minorities of this country. The minorities of this country have enabled the utilization of judiciary to overturn what a parliament decides is very effectively in terms of laws. We firmly believe that the laws is the sole domain of lawmakers who have been elected by the people. And if you want to say change the substance of the laws, you must win an election.
Okay. So on this issue of parliamentary sovereignty, those who've been quite critical of the proposal are that you can't be a lawmaker and then the adjudicator of said laws. The reason why you have a judiciary and a judiciary in the form of a constitutional bound judiciary is that somebody must be able to look at those laws, look at society, and then consider whether or not this is a fair representation of the aspirations of the people. But you can't be making the law and then making those additional decisions as well.
We firmly believe that's incorrect. If the judiciary wants to get into that space, it must contest an election. Making laws is a sole domain of lawmakers, which are elected by the people. So it's express will of the people who ultimately get to parliament. And we firmly believe they have the exclusive domain and the right to make laws of this country, including changing the laws of this country.
I still want to challenge you, but I know that this is not your one issue.
Yeah.
So let's just look at the death penalty. Very contentious
issue.
And the Constitution in its current form has as its number one principle everyone's right to life, dignity, etc. Somebody gets elected and says, people are sick and tired of crime. As lawmakers, we reintroduce the death penalty. Without due regard to this fundamental principle, what happens then?
Look, I think we are very consistent with the Bill of Rights in our country, in appreciation of where we come from. So when we move away from a parliament sovereignty, is to also ensure that we make laws that are consistent with our Bill of Rights. We don't just imagine our Bill of Rights away and start crafting things not consistent with who we are as a people. So some key foundational documents will still determine and upheld these things. I mean, the one which we don't agree with is a ruling which was made by the Constitutional Court, which guarantees the absolute right of prisoners to vote. Because they are citizens of this country. Whether they've committed a crime or no crime, for us, we don't agree with that one. So insofar as there's issues of gay rights, respect of life, we fully support those. But we also believe that because this is for us, the difference for us starts at the point of understanding our ideology. Okay. Our ideology is Ubuntu. One of the three aspects of Ubuntu is Umuntu Abantu. Now that says to us, we are not an individual society. Or our understanding and our ideology says you become an individual on the basis of your contribution to the communal table. Okay. So once you have put your individual interest ahead of the collective, that's why you'll find in society people will say, "Sege injalo munda kusasa umuntu." So once you do that and move away, it also means you can't be treated like a normal person who still contributes. Right. And that's why we believe you should not have the right to vote.
Okay. I'm sure there are many pillars to this, but basically the principle of parliamentary sovereignty that you're advocating is still in the spirit of the Universal Bill of Rights.
Absolutely.
And the South African Bill of Rights.
Correct.
But there are just some laws like prisoners having rights to vote that would need to be reimagined, and their rights are not entrenched in said Bill of Rights.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in any case, rights have limitations, by the way. The fact that they're incarcerated, they can't go anywhere whenever they want, so there's limitations inherently. So we're saying move away from this constitutional democracy. Number two, have a cabinet. Number three, reduce parliamentarians from the 400 to 100. 60 of those 100 must be directly elected. So then we must have 60 district municipalities in the country. Move away from the 257 municipalities to 60 districts in the country. You consolidate government. You've got a smaller government that is much more streamlined, and remove the provincial sphere of government. Then you'll have national, and you have 60 districts in the country.
Okay.
And MPs will be elected. 60 of them will be elected directly from these districts.
Okay, I'm not that clever, contrary to what people think. So let's start again.
Yeah.
So make government smaller. Because if government is smaller and leaner, it's proven in many countries it's more efficient.
Absolutely.
Okay? And you use fewer resources.
Absolutely.
33% of a fiscal budget that's paying salaries is problematic in many, many ways. Okay. So that's the principle from which you begin.
Correct.
So you say the first thing we need to do is get rid of tier middle.
Correct.
Provincial government.
Absolutely.
No more MECs and premiers.
No premier.
Out.
Exactly.
National government and local government.
Correct.
Those should be the two spheres of government.
Correct.
Okay. In national, in parliament, a smaller parliament.
Yes.
100 representatives.
Correct.
60 of those directly
elected.
So in other words, I would go and vote directly for Mr. Baloyi.
Yes. And no longer the party. Correct.
And how would that help?
And it would help because there's direct representation, direct accountability. And it would now change when you have people who have sworn their allegiance to the party and now their residents are saying, but what are you going to do for our district? Because you no longer represent your party, you represent us in the district, and you go to parliament. So this will improve accountability, transparency, but equally it will introduce an element which says my people first. What do I go and negotiate on behalf of my people when I get to parliament? Where my people are going to actually hold me to account when I come back there.
Okay, so I don't know how big in your view is a district, but let's say Ekurhuleni
is
a district.
Correct.
So then suddenly there are potholes and water pipes burst, and we all go, Upo Baloyi. All of us are saying that.
Yeah. So you still keep the mayoral system. So a district will still be led by a mayor, a mayoral committee with an executive mayor. So what we are doing effectively, because in the country you've got the three categories of municipalities. You have a local municipality, mm-hmm. and then you've got a district municipality, which is made up of no less than three local municipalities, okay. and then you've got a metro. Okay. In Gauteng, we've got three metros, and we've got two districts, which yeah. look at the West Rand and the Vaal. So yeah. those two districts would effectively become a district okay. and consolidate the three municipalities into one single municipality.
But when you look at municipalities, and I know we're not going into a local government election, but some of the issues, high vacancy rates, not enough skills, especially core technical skills like engineering. Mm-hmm. That's why potholes are potholes and burst pipes are burst pipes, because the people who need to fix it are actually not the technicians equipped for it. Budgeting is a huge issue because not enough money comes from Treasury into local municipalities. You expect people to pay their way, which is a good principle, but with a high unemployment rate, people can't pay their way.
Yeah, I mean, we must also reevaluate the white paper that gave birth to the assumptions of local government and the laws that subsequently were made, because it made some key foundational assumptions which have been proven incorrect. The funding mix is incorrect. But at the same time, when we speak that the country has a high level of unemployment, people don't appreciate that it has a direct impact into the ability to pay for services. Mm-hmm. So number one, at the same time, local municipalities have limited authority to also raise monies outside of water, sanitation and sewer and also on your normal land tax, which is your rates tax. So we must really start thinking about municipalities of the future and their areas of scope and what they can do and they cannot do. Okay. But it's difficult to do so when you've got three local municipalities in the same space and that you can't consolidate and pool the resources right. and ensure that you are planning better. And at the same time, when you do so, you also devolve responsibilities that were shared by province and some that were competency shared by both national right. and province. So we firmly believe something like education should be managed at a district municipality. Right. Policing should be managed at a district municipality. Right. So the specialized part of policing must remain a national competence. Okay. Because now people are getting tired of mayor saying, but I don't have authority over the police. Yeah. I don't have authority over... Okay. Because that's the closest sphere to the people, and people want their closest sphere to be capacitated with resources and competences.
So the police allocated to Ekurhuleni, even if we call them metro police, should be empowered.
Correct.
And what should be happening at SAPS level is more strategy, fight syndicated crime. But the people in Ekurhuleni know what the Ekurhuleni problem is, and those police must respond to Ekurhuleni problems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We believe if you structure government that way and get the resources closer to the problems, you'll be able to see change.
Okay. So you're sort of touching on crime and unemployment, but your key interventions on key issues here.
Look, I think on crime, crime becomes a choice as a consequence of people saying, what am I going to eat tonight? Mm. So if we don't resolve the issue of unemployment and poverty, then you won't deal with crime sustainably. Even though with crime, you must get more resources. With those resources, you must get more, you must invest more into fighting crime and your own bodies and your technologies and other resources as well. But at the same time, let's get people employed. We firmly believe that the easiest way to get young people off the streets at this point in time is actually through government conscription and getting more young people into the military, those who don't have any skill, who are busy drinking savannas and nyaupe on every road. And we firmly believe that this is actually a bigger problem than people want to admit. Right. Because if you don't resolve this generation's challenges, imagine the future taxpayers in 5-10 years' time. Yeah. Who's going to be? These people are supposed to be working now as we speak. So when this generation, which is aging quicker, I mean the current one and getting to 60, who's going to continue working and facilitating economic growth? So we must rescue these young people into a path of success. And those who, and I think one of the exciting ones is where we're saying those who have got skills which are needed outside of the country, government will support them in leaving the country and going to take up those opportunities across the world and be able to sustain
so
themselves.
Many people saying different things about how you empower the youth. You're talking about first and foremost a discipline issue, so use the army as a place where young people are taught responsibilities.
Yeah.
Others say change the curriculum for education.
That's very important too.
And future-proof them.
Yeah.
Others talk about bringing God back in our schools. There's so many different
but
views.
But God never left. If you know what God is, you can't say bring God back as if God is an entity. Like this water, we can take it out of the room, bring it back. So, I mean, that's a very clumsy argument from people who want to pretend they are holier than thou. Mm. But at the heart of it, it's multiple strategies. One, you need to ensure that young people are immediately moved from the streets, and those who are in school, you future-proof them by changing their curriculum. And one of the curriculum interventions we're going to make is the following one. We're going to introduce built environment, which is engineering essentially.
Okay.
So if you look at Advancing World, they mix technology with built and with engineering from a very young age. So it's not just robotics without understanding of the infra engineering. So you must pair the two together. So our children must not worry about locusts, but they must really have a curiosity about building roads, bitumen, and if you destroy, this is what happens. So we must stimulate the type of thinking. And one of the more controversial things we are going to do is amend our admission policy in education to say you can't have more than 10% foreigners in public education.
Right. Oof. Okay.
I mean, go to Renval Primary, you'll find 90% foreigners. If you're just walking around there, you'll
now
hear Kiswahili.
What's your view on immigration, illegal immigration?
Oh, well, once you start saying illegal immigration, you're speaking about a crime. So it means that we must process them, number one, assist them to go back home. Our government has been very clumsy. It has not utilized our laws to ensure that we prevent people from coming in the country legally. And if you are here in the country illegally, we send you back. But it also has not engaged in economic diplomacy. It doesn't make sense to me that why aren't we saying to South Africans, let's take IDC, let's go and invest in Zimbabwe, let's go and invest in Mozambique. Mm-hmm. It is cheaper creating opportunities in Zimbabwe than taking Zimbabweans who are in the country and sending them back or building a wall that's going to cost us trillions. So part of our strategy is to ensure that we utilize our law enforcement, but at the same time we say, South Africans, let's go out of the country, let's go and invest in Mozambique, let's go and invest in all of these areas. So the government is going to support South Africans to go and invest there. And 40% of what they get is going to come back into the country. That's sustaining this ecosystem of economic diplomacy, but equally creating job opportunities for Zimbabweans in Zimbabwe.
It's not quite accurate for me, but it's sort of the Silicon Valley model.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying, is that if you are using American IP,
correct,
but localizing it in India and develop a class of engineers, they stay in India.
Yes.
Some will come back to Silicon Valley.
Absolutely.
But you've created a global value chain.
Absolutely. But remember, I mean, how do you strengthen the SADC approach? Mm-hmm. I mean, SADC is dysfunctional and does not have the teeth without sound economic backing. Mm-hmm. So no one has said beyond intra-Africa trade, let's just put the roads and infrastructure. No one is saying, but I mean, look at Zimbabwe, food basket of the continent at some stage. Mozambique has resources, the issues of gas. Why are we taking a backseat behind this and not actually saying, let us unlock the value? And actually start integrating from an economic point of view. I mean, we are firmly of the view that when we have led this country and you go to Musina, after 10, 15 years, you will not see a difference between Musina and Wabulawai, because it will be a seamless skyline that has been changed as a consequence of the minerals and the people and the infrastructure invested.
Okay, one comment that's quite critical. Others are positive. But William says, this is a circus, Lerato. There's too many unnecessary political formations.
Mm.
It's almost tantamount to greed, he says, because some of these ideas are being espoused by different parties. Why can't you all just club together?
I think that's a very lazy argument. The fact that there's different choices, and for you as a consumer to make different choices on what best represents you, and the fact that all of us don't believe in the same thing. And if you look at where we get the money from, so how can we in good conscience go and just work together with people who are getting money from people which we fundamentally are trying to deal with their interest and hold and dominance of the economy? We can't do that. So we are very clear, and that's why we've chosen the scenic route, and that's why we are not funded. We are funded by ourselves, that we are an independent party and contesting for power in our body of our politics. So those who feel that you must just work together.
Right.
I mean, this thing does not exist. There's no group of South Africans who will just come together like a super team and then just work together.
Right.
And on more so when we don't believe in the same thing. So what we stand for is fundamentally different. We are the only ones saying, let's change the system, which is our constitutional democracy.
Good.
Everyone else wants to be prefects of this constitutional democracy.
Okay, so you say status quo change, rethink South Africa, reimagine it. And my understanding is you believe Shiluba fundamentally should be speaking to the aspirations of voters age 18 to 45 in particular.
In fact, what has been quite surprising is that it's now beyond that. Our grandparents are joining us.
Wow.
They are supportive of what we are doing, and they're seeing the value. And they realize that the time to prioritize Nelson Mandela is gone. Now the time is to prioritize the Adinzwalos, because that is the future. They see the lives that they live today, their struggles today, and they're saying it's no longer about that, it's all about Adinzwalos.
All right. Bongani Baloyi, president of the Shiluba Power, Flower Power. We'll see how they fare next week. Best wishes.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.